Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
Is more better? More is inevitable, but is it better? That's a question that the NFL is forcing us all to answer as they are on the brink of expanding their regular season to 17 games, which is weird that it's going to be an odd number of games. Isn't that strange?
It bothers me a little bit. They will be
like,
neutral site games, but yeah, 17. It's a weird number to get to. I always have felt that not enough people have worn the number over the course of the NFL's history. I think it's a fantastic number. But as far as regular season games go, yes. So if you are somebody who is like Monk or perhaps have other things that make you really, really bothered, like just random, the occasional...
How about living on the 14th floor of a building? Would that bother anyone?
Well, the 13th.
Like living on the 13th floor?
Well, but it's the 14th.
But it's the 13th?
Yeah.
Explain.
Well, I live on the 14th floor. I live on the 14th floor of my building.
Okay. But
it goes 12, 14.
Oh.
So if I jumped out of the window, I'd hit the ground a little bit sooner than I'd expect, according to Mitch Hedberg.
Okay.
We're not really fooling anybody, but it says 14.
Just a branding thing.
Exactly right.
Slightly luckier.
I wondered if we get cheaper rent because of that.
I wonder why
this floor was available. Yeah, like it's unlucky.
That's a valid question.
17 games. And then you have two extra playoff games. An additional team in each conference making the playoffs. That's the part of it I actually like. I would prefer that they expanded the playoffs without expanding the regular season. I would prefer that part. But between the two, the changes to the playoffs are the ones that I actually think that might be good, because I don't like it how a team that is assured of one of the top two seeds will coast through the final week or two of the season. I don't think that's good for the game. There is nothing that is more frustrating as a fan than watching and needing a specific result and having, say, the Saints playing the Panthers, where the Saints are in line for the number one seed, and you're like, you should have the advantage and you need the Panthers to lose. But you're like, the Saints aren't going to play that hard because they might not even start their quarterback because they don't need this game. Like that, those are bad situations to be in as a fan. And I think as leagues, those are the situations that they want to avoid, where you have your best teams not playing the hardest because they don't need the win.
Right. You do not want the last stretch of the season to become meaningless when a regular season already has games that from time to time don't have a whole lot of meaning attached to them. I don't think the NFL is going to fall entirely in that conversation the way that basketball and baseball have. There are just too many games in both of those respective sports. The idea of more versus less, which is what you began this segment asking the question of. Well, I'm going to bring it to another thing. When it comes to steak, Danny, do you like fillets? Do you like a nice ribeye with a good amount of meat?
Ribeye.
Okay, same. And I think that's where the NFL playoffs were, because you could have a short season, like 10 games or something like that. That's a fillet. I'm still hungry for more at the end of it. With the ribeye, I feel really good with my 16 ounces, my 16 games. I feel like now we are venturing into, okay, this is skillet steak. This is like this is ground beef. This is not that good. And it's just you're venturing into dangerous territory by adding some crap team that's the seventh team. And yes, they're not that good. Let's be honest. Like, do we really believe that, like,
you're gonna have more 8-8 teams make the playoffs?
Yeah, there's a possibility for more of that. That annoys me more than a 17 game regular season, Danny O'Neill. Seeing on the bottom line, there's a playoff team that is 8-8 or a playoff team that is 7-9. I know it worked out for the Seahawks in the past. It's fine. Let's keep it that was cool for the Seahawks in the past. Let's not have it happen again, kind of deal. How about that? I think that it had the perfect amount. And I think you're venturing into just an area where the games in the playoffs potentially aren't that good. I'm with you. I like the idea of only two teams getting a bye week. And I think that maybe opens things up for the rest of the league and potentially makes it easier for the NFL playoffs to have a higher degree of randomness than it already has. It's probably of all the major sports, the one that has the most, unless you count hockey. I like that idea of it, but I don't want to watch these bad teams, and I will call them bad, because I am an elitist. I am a snob with my little Chianti and sniffing it right now. I do not want that scrub 7 seed with Duck Rudolph or Mitchell Goff or any of these other quarterbacks I just don't enjoy watching in. Sorry, don't want it.
Yeah, but instead of asking him and giving him a gimme putt, that means that the number 2 seed in the conference, though, you have to go up there and line up against a fairly, like, average to maybe slightly, barely above average team. You should be able to win it. And if you can't win, then you don't deserve to be there. I would feel differently about this, Paul. I would honestly feel differently if there was a slew of wild card teams that were advancing to the Super Bowl. If it was like the baseball playoffs, which I really do, I think that the wild card in baseball has changed the game in a not positive way, in that it's become, you just need to get your ticket into the tournament. And that means as much as anything, that if you get in, getting in with 86 wins isn't all that different from a team that gets in with 102 wins. Yes, you have to win a 1-game playoff, but once you're in, you then have the same chance that they do. And oh, by the way, if you've got two really dominant pitchers, that's going to give you an advantage that maybe you don't quote unquote deserve against a team that was able to do it consistently over 162 games. The breadth of the season matters in baseball. Like, that's the best determination of the best teams as opposed to the playoff format. And every time that they expand it, it gives more teams that puncher's chance. And I feel like the puncher's chance comes home more in baseball. Whereas in the NFL, what we've seen by and large is that it usually is a team with a bye that gets to the Super Bowl. The best teams are usually the ones that advance through, especially recently.
If you had to give a percentage on the amount of 7 seeds that'll beat 2 seeds, what do you think it'll be?
20%.
20, that's high. I feel like it's closer to like 10. And if I think if it's 10% for every single game, there's no point in playing the game. I think that the way that they had it set up was perfect. Two teams getting a bye, I like that. And I also like the idea of only one team getting a bye, but the only way that you can make a one team bye happen is if you add this 7th playoff team in. And I think every single year we see a team that does not deserve to be in make it as a 6 seed. This year was a little different. This year we saw 2 6 seeds do pretty darn well in the playoffs, the Titans and the Vikings, who beat the New Orleans Saints. But that is the rare exception. And now with 7 seeds, I'm sorry, they're just going to get killed every single time. It is not going to be a game. It is going to be an execution.
The history for wildcard teams, 2012 to present, so basically the last 8-9 seasons, the wildcard teams in that first round, it's 50-50, home versus road. So wildcard teams are as successful as the worst two division champions. So I can see that point of, you are going to have more 2 seeds that are going to be knocked off than I think that we naturally expect. But I also feel like if you're a 2 seed that can't win at home against the 7th best team in your conference, I'm not going to feel bad that you got knocked out early. Like, that's a matchup you should be able to win.
True.
And if you can't win it, the idea that it's not often going to be a compelling matchup, and we could see more absolute, as you referred to it, as a snuff film, like that. Yeah. I don't think that's an appealing part of the playoffs, because you don't want more bad playoff matchups.
Exactly.
Like that's you don't want to have more of that. But I'm not going to complain if there's an extra playoff game on each day. Honestly, like that sounds like a pretty compelling weekend for me.
Complaining isn't my nature. And Danny, you know what? I do not want to get up at 9 a.m. on a weekend to watch the 2 seed pulverize the 7 seed.
We've worked together for a little while. This is your worst take.
I'm sorry.
This is the absolute worst take.
I want one day to sleep in. I just want one. And like during the week, I'm sorry. I just can't do that, because I love waking up to do the show with you, Danny. But I do not want to get up at 9 a.m. on a day that I don't have to.
The idea that you're complaining about the single biggest sports viewing advantage in the entire country, which is the Pacific time zone, and that it's like somehow a burden on you, that it's terrible to get out of bed and go watch football. That's awesome. Football with coffee is fantastic.
Some people say no booze before noon. I say no sports before noon. I need to have woken up.
I will repeat, of all the different things you've said, by far your worst take.
I will go down.
I hope I hope you adapt to it because it is by far the best thing about the Pacific time.
I will go down like a 7 seed versus a 2 seed on this one. I am selfish entirely. And you know what? You're probably right on this front, but I'm sorry. Like a 9 a.m. college football game with coffee. I don't know what's happening at 9 in the morning. There's a reason that I wake up for this show, Danny, every morning at like 4:15 because I don't know what's happening when I wake up. I am the worst morning person in the world. I need all sorts of coffee, all sorts of meats and proteins to get myself to this point of energy. 9 a.m. to watch the 2 seed, massacre the 7 seed. Not feeling it.
We're going to go from that take to what I heard was the worst punishment suggested, and it comes from a guy I normally like, Paul.
Who?
It's Stephen A. Smith.
Ooh.
I like Stephen A. Smith's energy. I like that he's comical to me. Like all of these different things. He had the worst idea for a punishment of the Houston Astros.
I want Major League Baseball players to listen to me right here, right now. Put me on the damn camera, please. I don't want to see no highlights right now. Let me tell you something. Here's how you do this. You don't throw a 95 mile per hour fastball at somebody. You don't sit up there and hit them with pitches. You don't do all of that. All you have to do as players to shame the Houston Astros, you don't shake their hands, you don't communicate with them. Hell, you can start every Major League Baseball game against the Houston Astros as a team, turning your back to that franchise.
Was he about to call the Astros?
Come on. You're gonna we'll show them by our body language.
We won't shake their hands. We won't show them respect.
Yeah. Is there a worse idea for a punishment? Like this is we're gonna publicly scorn them.
I think they'd like that, to be honest. I mean, Lydia's brought this up a couple of times the last few days. They are trying to turn themselves into like the us against the world kind of story. And I feel like if that's what they're trying to do, then this sort of lends itself to helping them feel like it's them against the world.
One of the things, and I regret that I didn't point it out more, that I found very funny in retrospect, is that Carlos Correa, when he got very indignant about Cody Bellinger and the different things that he plays it. He gets really mad at Bellinger.
He talks about Altuve, and he says, Jose Altuve cheated Judge out of the MVP. I mean, Cody, like, you know the facts. We're all in there, and nobody wants to talk about this, but I'm going to talk about it.
The idea of seizing moral high ground, of you don't know the facts about our cheating scandal, is hilarious.
He accused him of not knowing how to read, Danny. You left that part out, too. He said, so either he doesn't understand facts, doesn't know how to read, or doesn't have reading comprehension.
The idea that you could get holier than thou. Listen, you really don't know the ins and outs of all of the different things we were doing to cheat.
I absolutely love it. I mean, clearly Cody Bellinger can't read because he couldn't see his statistics. For the World Series.
Like, what? How do you possibly get to the point of, like, I'm going to try to shame him for not understanding the nuances of how we cheated?
Spin zone.
It's just hilarious. I've got him there. Yeah, there you go, Carlos. You guys were so nuanced and comprehensive in your cheating that people don't understand just exactly how you cheated.
I love the spin zone. I absolutely love the spin zone. Honestly, I hope that Correa continues it. Because wouldn't it be really funny to have one Astro who's basically doing what I've been doing over the last couple of days, which is saying, well, if you stunk playing the Astros and you were batting against the Astros and you didn't do anything of value, like Aaron Judge, who went 12-49 in 2 series against the Astros with 21 strikeouts, yet is still complaining, even though the Yankees may or may not have done some of the same things over the last couple of years. Like, I feel like if you stunk, you can't complain. So I like that Carlos Correa is doing this because he's making me feel better about my take. And I'm really just walking on Take Island right now. Huh? I mean, I'm all alone. Play some Green Day in the background.
Why do you think players don't do that? Because it would be entertaining. And players love having the motivation of us against the world. Is it because they don't like to be hated? Like they're hesitant? Why don't more players adopt that heel persona? Richard Sherman does. But he's one of the only guys that will truly be that guy and fully act it out.
Maybe because they're so accessible these days? Is it that? Is it because...
Maybe because he's one of the only players that can back up everything he's actually saying.
Could
you think a lot of people have less confidence about being embarrassed in the age of freezing cold takes?
Maybe. I think it's because everybody's got a deep-seated need to be loved. Like, I think that there's a softness that people genuinely don't like embracing. A lot of people will say, I don't care what people think about me. But very few people actually have the courage to believe that and to truly mean it. Say, I don't care what you think about me, but in the meantime, I want to make it as sympathetic as possible. Look at Rob Manfred. How did he preface his conversation about, I did 45-minute press conference. I said a lot. He tries to engender sympathy instead of saying, look, I made one bad expression. I apologize for calling it a piece of metal. Like, let's move on from that. It's very funny how devoted people are to not letting that and to finding some sort of piece of public sympathy.
We're all guilty of it. And I mean, I'll even admit it right now. Like, I want everyone to like me despite my, as everyone else describes it, bad waking up at 9 a.m. to watch football.
It's
take.
An awful take.
But I still want you guys to love me.
Then have a better take, Paul, because it's a terrible take. It's Danny and Gallant. It's time to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. Brought to you by Toyota of Puyallup. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Ashley.
Hey, you guys.
How do you feel about the Pacific time zone for watching sports?
I love it. Period. End of story.
It's the best.
No complaining. It's lovely. Also, I would consider 9 a.m. for us sleeping in. Just saying.
You can sleep till 10 a.m. though if you wanted. 10:30 even.
True.
Lydia's face right now.
But still. I mean, I get up at 4, so I'll take 9 any day.
I know, but that's what I mean. Like, I, you know, 4:15 one day and then like 10:30 the next. Come on. It's cozy in my bed. I don't have to do anything.
You know,
let's go around the NFL.
Oh, my gracious. Okay.
I don't have to do anything like turn on the TV.
I know. It's so hard.
Such a burden.
I'm going to turn around. I'm going to feed my cat. Come on.
Life is difficult.
It's so hard.
Okay. Ben Gosling, he's the beat writer for the Vikings. He reported that defensive end Everson Griffin, almost messed it up, voided the final 3 years of his deal with Minnesota, so hitting free agency could possibly reunite him with his college coach, one Peter Carroll.
We've talked about that before. There's something about Griffin that I don't think Pete's ever really... And they've had opportunities to draft him, and they didn't. They've had opportunities to trade for him, and they didn't. Everson Griffin's a really good player, but I don't see a reunion simply because Pete's passed on it so many times, and he's probably got as much or more insight into that player as anybody else.
If you go back to 2018, there was a story in September where Everson Griffin basically like left the team for a little bit
yes.
of time, and he wasn't allowed back until he had a mental health evaluation.
Correct.
Mental health is a serious thing. I hope that Everson Griffin has been able to battle some of these demons and get back on the right track since then, since this was about a year and a half ago or so. But you wonder about bringing someone who maybe has some of those issues into this locker room right now, because the Seahawks locker room, I think, is about as stable as you could possibly have in the league. I do like the idea of bringing in someone like Everson Griffin just based off of the talent and based off the skill, and I do think that he's exactly the kind of player the Seahawks need, and maybe they could get him at a discount. But you do have to think about that element of it.
He was a fourth-round pick, I believe. There's something in their scouting profile of him that has made them decide that he's not the kind of player that they would want to bring aboard.
Tom Pelissero said that there were two team sources for the Vikings that said that two team sources had to refute a report that Griffin was arrested over the weekend in connection to an attempted break-in at one of his teammates' houses. Something's up there. It's a very bizarre story. If you go back to 2018, I might do some more digging on this for tomorrow, because I really want to know what happened then. But I do remember, like, Everson Griffin, I thought he was a good player, thought he was one of the Vikings leaders. And then all of a sudden, this story just popped up one year, and I was like, whoa, where did this come out from?
Emmett Smith was on the Adam Lefkoe show and suggested that Dak Prescott should take a team-friendly deal. Smith said Dak has to understand and maybe take another perspective. The perspective may not be all about the money you get, but it may be how much money you're willing to leave on the table, because the Cowboys are a marketable organization.
Wait, which player was this?
Emmett Smith said about
Emmett
Dak.
Emmett Smith, the guy who held out the first two games of the 1993
yeah.
season. That guy?
Yeah.
That guy's saying that Dak Prescott should take less to work. It is amazing how former players, once they get in a position where they can benefit from being toadies to the team, absolutely roll over and give you the management party line. Dak Prescott should get every dime that he can out of the Dallas Cowboys. And any player who cash checks from the Cowboys who feels otherwise is being a hypocrite and sucking up to Jerry Jones.
I really liked Emmitt Smith as a kid. I will admit that he was one of a few of those Dallas Cowboy teams from the mid-90s that like I really liked, especially since he went and played for the Florida Gators way back in the day. I had a more appreciation for him on that front. He has awful takes to the point where there is a website called walterfootball.com that does like mock drafts. They will do an Emmitt Smith mock draft where basically they just completely butcher names, pronunciations, and opinions. And they do it basically the way that Emmitt Smith used to do it when he was on ESPN back in the day. They're very, very funny.
Oh, you're right. I'm logged on right now, and here's the first one. It says, football games start entirely too early on the West Coast.
Whoa. Emmitt Smith said that too? Validation.
No, he didn't.
Burn.
I tried to spins on that, Carlos Correa style.
So, guys, yesterday we talked about Washington Redskins tight end Jordan Reed still not being cleared from concussion protocol. Man, words are hard for me this morning. Since the third preseason game, but within the past 24 hours, he's apparently been cleared and expected to be released soon.
It was such a... Yeah, you see the headline. I was like, man, he's still not over that concussion. And then it's like, oh, he's going to be cleared and then cut. I was like, oh, that's... thank goodness for that. God, what a ruthless business. What a just ruthless, ruthless business. Glad you're over your concussion. Now get to stepping.
The Washington Redskins have not changed. You brought it up yesterday. It is still run by Daniel Snyder. You can try to act like Bruce Allen was the problem, but this is the kind of PR nightmare that you create for yourself when you got someone like that in charge.
What would their record be in the XFL? Because they're not going undefeated. Like, they would win it, and they're the best team. I don't think they'd go undefeated, though. That there's too much dysfunction.
10 game season, right?
Yeah.
8-2.
And Trent, we got to understand, Trent Williams, is he going to play for them? Do we know if he's going to play?
I don't know, because his big issue was with their medical staff.
The medical staff, yeah.
Which I don't know that they changed necessarily, and I think he's got a good reason to be a little upset with them.
Yes, they didn't diagnose a cancerous tumor on his head.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, like there was like a lump that was, I mean, it's not honestly not like they didn't detect it on a scan. Like he had a lump and he's like, look at this. And they're like, it's probably fine. And then it's cancerous.
There's a track record of bad stuff happening there. Darius Geis re-aggravated an injury. You have Alex Smith having all those surgery complications that he's had where he almost had to amputate his leg. Like the Redskins medical staff, there is a track record of them being incompetent. You can look it up for yourself. I think Deadspin had a piece about it at some point this past year. This is something that's a real thing for them, and they should do something about it, because why not make your best players happy? But I don't know if they have done that to this point.
You think the Seahawks could get Trent Williams? Is that something you might be interested in? He's a left tackle. He's big enough to play.
How old is he right now? He
came in the league in 2010.
Trent Williams' age, he is 31 years old. You're probably going to have to give up, I'd imagine, a first-round pick for him.
Yeah, you can't give up your first-round pick for him. It is Danny and Gallant. We'll keep rolling on here. That is around the NFL. Somebody got into trouble. Offensive lineman carrying around hundreds of pounds. That's not a bad thing unless it's, well, what Greg Robinson got carrying. We'll tell you about that next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I love documentaries, drama pictures, nonfiction books, fiction books about the drug war. I love them. I love Narcos. I love Power of the Dog, The Cartel by Don Winslow. The newest one is The Border. I've read plenty. I am fascinated by the drug economy. And when a player of a professional sports franchise gets involved in the drug economy, it's like two of my great interests merge together. And then exactly what happened yesterday, because I saw right about the time we were going off the air that Greg Robinson, who is one of the larger draft busts of the past 10 years, a former number two overall pick by the Rams, a guy who is the thing that I noticed most this previous season when he was with the Browns was that he was ejected for kicking an opponent in the head.
I interviewed that guy, by the way, right after the game happened on the radio, Kenny Vaccaro. It was very fun. I was like, so what was it like to get kicked in the head? And he was like,
got kicked in the head.
Yeah. He was like, well, I don't really want to talk about that. And I was like, oh, I kind of do, but that's fine. We'll talk about your victory.
Greg Robinson got arrested for transporting marijuana across the border. And as soon as I saw that, I had one question. how much? Because, look, if this is a small scale, and immediately I was like, that is not the sort of decision that you make. You're not going to forget and bring an ounce across the border.
No.
Like, anybody knows that, like, you do not, and maybe everybody doesn't know, but in this day and age of increased tolerance of weed, other countries aren't like that. Like, you take drugs to a place like Bali or Singapore.
Singapore, right.
I mean, like, people are killed. Like, there's a death sentence for drug possession in some of these places.
In the Philippines, I think that there's actually been basically a looking the other way for those who will act as vigilantes and kill drug dealers.
Yeah, and growing up and going to high school in California, there was no greater boogeyman that we were ever told than going to a Mexican jail where they never know when you're going to get out. You're in a different country. So how much was it? And it turned out it was quite a bit. Greg Robinson was transporting 157 pounds of marijuana.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of weed. And then immediately I started searching for points of reference to how does this compare to other drug busts? Turns out it's 56 pounds lighter than Nate Newton, who was caught with 213 pounds of weed.
That's
Bam
a lot.
Morris was like, remember him? He was the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think he also played for the Kansas City Chiefs. He was caught with a kilo, which, and I will say this, nothing has ever done more to encourage American understanding of the metric system than the drug economy, in which you then immediately start making the transformation and being able to compute it into pounds.
Why don't we just say pounds? Why do we have to say kilo?
Well, come the on. Rest of the world works on the metric system.
Yeah, but we rule the world, don't we?
It did. And there are others. What is the biggest scandal, drug dealing scandal by a professional athlete? It consulted and forced Paul to do a little bit of homework. I immediately went to Daryl Henley. Henley, the volume wasn't there. He gets, whether you would say docked or bonus points for creativity, he had enrolled former cheerleaders in his smuggling operation. In fact, a 20-year-old former cheerleader with the Rams was caught with 26 ounces of cocaine, which she was taking from Atlanta to Memphis, just in a bag. And she was like, I didn't know what was in there. I just knew that he told me to take this package and I would get a great deal.
Sounds like he watched the movie Blow, starring Johnny Depp, because I think that's one of the tactics that they use. I think they did it with flight attendants. But my number one draft pick is someone, Danny, that was distributing not any of the cocaine or any of the marijuana. David Jenkins was an Olympic silver medalist sprinter. He sold $100 to $300 million worth of steroids. Now, it's not those drugs, and I'm not sure what the repercussions are comparatively. He did not get that long of a sentence considering he sold that much. But that is a lot of money. I mean, that is a Walter White from Breaking Bad kind of empire.
Yeah, certainly anybody that watches Narcos. And in any drug movie that you ever see, there are a couple of different staples. And the first of the staples is sort of the moral quandary, where they get into the point of like, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to do this? And usually there's some desperation involved and they're at wit's end and they're not really sure how. Like, there's some sort of urgency that makes them. After they make that decision, the next thing that comes is the massive amounts of money where they have too much money to deal with. And the money will inevitably be stashed somewhere. Maybe it's in the walls of a house. Perhaps it's put into plastic bags and buried out in the yard. But these are like the staples of any sort of drug drama. Are all of a sudden they go from, oh my God, I don't know how we're going to pay rent, to we're making so much money that we can't physically store all of the bills. And maybe rats are eating the dollar bills. Like, there's some sort of like
Bad
ridiculous
Boys 2 shout out.
Exaggeration that's being made of like, we have too much money now. Which you wouldn't think would be a problem, but it inevitably is.
You got to find a way to launder it. Next thing you know, Saul Goodman's telling you to buy a laser tag place.
You've bought a car wash. Things are going south.
Right. And you have all of a sudden Huel's just lying on a giant stack of money like it's a giant mattress, a double king size mattress.
I was interested in the one you found, though. Denny McClain. I remember it was a very prominent pitcher. He's the last guy to win 30 games in a season.
Which is crazy. And that was 1968, I guess, when he did it. Yeah, so this guy was alleged to, or excuse me, he was a part of organized crime. You might be able to say more about these guys than I can, Danny. I don't know who Anthony Spilotro or John Gotti Jr. are, but I'm assuming.
Why do you think that I'm familiar with organized crime?
I mean, you're in New York right now, right? So,
that is horrible and stereotypical, Paul. How dare you?
Hey, forget about it. I never said it. He was arrested for trafficking cocaine, embezzlement, and racketeering. So, I mean, this guy just turned straight up gangster.
Yeah, that's a different level of, that's not, 150 or 156 pounds of marijuana, though. Like 156 pounds of marijuana.
That's a lot.
Yeah. It's just the idea of, I don't ever, when I watch any of these drug dramas, think to myself, oh, that looks like a good idea. Like, I don't, it never ends well for any of the drug dealers. Like, ever.
But it always looks so great at the beginning.
There's like a 1 year window when it's good. And then the rest of it, you've either got people trying to lock you up or people trying to kill you.
The funny thing is, it feels like when you watch these things, if they just stayed in their lane instead of being greedy, that they would never get caught. And yet, in every single one of these cases, these people dramatically change and they become different people. They're like, I can't stop. The money's just coming in. I can't get away from it. And then they start killing people over it. And that's usually like the dramatic turn where they go from being a sympathetic character to somebody that you absolutely despise.
Greg Robinson has made a lot of money in his career. He's made like $29 million. Like, he's made a lot of money in his career. And it's almost as if he asked himself, what business could I get into that has an even higher ceiling for revenue, but has an even larger downside than professional tackle football? Like, that was the danger and risk of CTE not sufficient for you? Like, was the risk of permanent career-altering injury? Or maybe you thought that the average NFL career of 3.5 to 4 seasons was, like, that's too long. I want something that's going to burn brighter and last shorter because, I do think that drug trafficking is probably that career which would have a higher ceiling of revenue and also more danger and less of a long-lived livelihood.
How much physical space... So, look, it's a plant. How much physical space would 156 pounds of marijuana take up? Like, that feels like it would be a lot of bags, right? Because we're not talking about a very dense substance. We're talking about, like, flowers, essentially. Like, how do you get that many? I feel like that's a ton of duffel bags to be
at the risk
around.
Of revealing too much about myself, I believe that there might be vacuum packing that's involved in that.
Okay.
I don't know if you would have needed... You don't necessarily need a semi-truck. Like, you don't need a semi-truck. I don't know if you could have used a regular passenger car, though, and just stashed it in, like, compartments. Like, that's a significant amount. Like, that's actually... Because I think that sometimes people, like, they play fast and loose with the idea of drug smuggling. Like, smuggling, to me, is, like, you have to build things to hide it. Like, that's actual smuggling. And I think that this required actual smuggling. Like, there had to be trap compartments built. Like, there had to be construction alterations made on whatever vehicle he was in.
Yeah. You know what? Like, it's a lot. I don't know how you get to that point. And also...
Watch too much Narcos.
Don't you sort of wonder what, like, the next step was? Like, who are you distributing this to? Do you have, like, in Breaking Bad... The same way Jesse Pinkman had a badger and a Skinny Pete and a combo, like a group of degenerate friends who are going to do all this for you?
I'm not really sure, and I don't know if he thought that far ahead. switching gears, we did miss, and we have not been able to talk about what was the greatest halftime interview ever conducted in professional tackle football. It was done by Diana Russini of the XFL, Matt McGloin, which, no, it's not a new McDonald's sandwich. Here was Matt McGloin.
Matt, what does this team need to do on offense to get something going here?
We need to change the whole entire game plan at halftime.
Okay, what do you need to change about the game plan? What are you frustrated about?
There's just a lot going on right now. It's embarrassing for us here as an offense, so a lot of things we want to fix and correct.
Thanks.
Wow.
I talked to head coach Kevin Gilbride about Matt McGloin's comments saying that the play calling is an issue. And I said, Coach, in all my years of covering football, I've never heard a quarterback say that. And he says, well, that makes two of us. I need to go talk to him and figure out what the problem is because he needs to play better.
Brock brought this up with us. The ABC broadcast of these games has been really, really like diving in to the nitty-gritty of what's going on the sideline, and they are really big into asking these awkward questions. I'll tell you what, I love it. I really, really enjoy what ABC's been bringing to the table in the XFL coverage. Like, that makes me want to watch a game on ABC significantly more than I would the average XFL game.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to raise flags. Pick up flags or throw them next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is Danny and Gallant. a couple people have pointed out that he wasn't, Greg Robinson was not arrested crossing the border. He was arrested by a Border Patrol agent, though, in West Texas. But it's possible that he might have been transporting stuff across it. His passenger was a part-time Uber driver.
Ooh.
And there was vacuum packing involved.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I'm still, like, it fascinates me because it's, if there wasn't vacuum packing, how much space would that actually physically take up?
Somebody was saying, think of it like 150-gallon-sized Ziploc bags.
Still a lot.
A lot of space.
Two or three bags? Double bags?
What do you think was going through his head as he's getting pulled over?
Pretty sure he did not think that he was going to get caught, right? You think he would have pulled over? Like, you have that much weed. Like, you're not hiding that anywhere.
But you're not going to get away. I don't know. Anyway, I'm fascinated by that story. That idea of like, hey, you know what would be a really good idea with this $1 million lottery ticket that I cashed in an NFL career? Try and parlay that into even more money with an even riskier profession.
Bold investment, bro.
It is. It is. Start with throwing flags. Ashley, would you like to lead off with a raising of a flag, a throwing of a flag, or picking one up?
Oh, sure. We're throwing it. You guessed it. Paul's 9 a.m. takes of games. No, not country music. I can get over that. I hear enough of that from John Clayton. I'm kind of over it. I just own my country music and love it. And I will die on that hill. But, okay. Like, 9 a.m. on a Saturday to watch a game? Come on. You got to show some commitment here, Paul. Well, I'm a little saddened at this, obviously.
Well, maybe I like to stay up really late on the weekends.
Mm.
I don't know. Do I have to sacrifice? My sacrifice.
And so, Thank you, Creed.
You're welcome. So I can wake up at 9 in the morning? I don't know.
Everyone should change their schedule because Paul needs to stay up late.
Yes. That's exactly it, Lydia. Like, this is, it's about me. It's about no one else.
Here's the problem with it is that as watching sports on the East Coast stinks.
I agree with that.
You have to stay up late. Now I realize why all these people are like, there are certain things like people are into late night television shows. Like, oh, did you see Jimmy Kimmel last night? No, I'm an adult. I go to bed at like 10:30. Nope. You got to stay up to 1 if you're going to watch West Coast sports here. Monday Night Football doesn't get over till midnight. It's terrible.
So bad.
I think mountain time is where it's best. I think mountain time, it's like...
Idaho!
Yeah! Lincoln or whatever they want to call themselves. Yeah, I don't know. I think that extra hour, it's nice. I'm sorry, college football games at 9 in the morning on a Saturday
is awesome.
It's really early.
It's great.
But I don't know
what's great.
I don't know what's happening.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's too much. My caffeine rush has not hit me by 9 a.m.
You just have to sit back and enjoy it. You don't have to understand it at the time.
That's exactly
just
right.
Just enjoy it. Let it come to you.
It's the time that you get to watch meaningless ACC football. It's fantastic.
I'm going to need something like what Michael Scott has, where he woke himself up with like a griddle of a George Foreman grill at the foot of his bed with bacon, because the smell of bacon would wake him up in the morning. Maybe that would work for me, although I just got to make sure to not burn my, toes.
One of my college roommates, Marcus Wright, he used to, he had a hard time getting up. So he would do different things to his alarm clock. At one point, he taped thumbtacks upside down on the snooze bar with the idea that he would puncture himself if he was hitting the snooze bar. My favorite was he taped his clock radio alarm to the ceiling with the idea that he would have to stand up to turn it off.
Wow.
Not thinking that it's probably the adhesive tape eventually is going to wear off because he didn't use duct tape. So it fell down and hit him in the head in the middle of the night, which I thought was awesome. Lydia, flags.
Well, Ash kind of stole mine, but you know what?
I'm sorry, friend.
There's double emphasis on this one. Disrespect to the entire West Coast.
Whoa!
Flags coming entire in from multiple West Coast. Directions.
Whoa!
Let love into your heart, Paul. Let love into your heart.
I'm a little nervous that like you're pulling up on me with some Tupac too. Like that's almost is a diss track coming?
No, this is the universal West Coast song.
It sure is.
Okay. Yeah. And I don't think there's any situation that could be played in which I won't kind of nod my head. Yeah. It's our song. West Coast anthem.
But it's about California.
Yeah, it's the West Coast, though.
Which okay. is on the West Coast. We'll take it.
Throw your dubs up.
Okay.
Paul, your turn for a flag.
Well, part of me wants to throw it at you people who are going to, I don't know, persecute me for my love of my beautiful bed. endorsements. Anyone? Anyone? Bed? Huh? Huh? Anyway.
It's not becoming to beg.
If I had to throw a flag at someone, I am going to throw a flag at the idea of a 7 seed making the playoffs. Fine. I'll get up at 9 in the morning. Do you really expect me to enjoy, as an average football watcher, the 2 seed destroying the 7 seed? That's what's going to happen for the most part. Yeah, every now and then there will be a miracle. And yeah, it's cool that maybe only one team per conference gets a bye week. I don't want to dilute the playoffs. The NFL playoffs are perfect as is. That is going to change, and I'm bummed out by it.
My flag is going to be thrown in an unusual direction. Stephen A. Smith, whom I generally really enjoy and think is very funny. And in general, the people suggesting stupid baseball punishments. I read Buster Olney, who is one of the ombudsmen of the game and kind of oversees it, suggested that the commissioner break out a full-blown censure. Like, oh, a censure. You're going to censure the Astros. Is that going to go down on their permanent record? Like, what exactly? what is a censure?
They'll never get into college now.
Come on. Like, the commissioner should send them a strongly worded letter about just how intolerable what they've done is. And Stephen A. Smith was absolutely no better.
I want Major League Baseball players to listen to me right here, right now. Put me on the damn camera, please. I don't want to see no highlights right now. Let me tell you.
That is a huge buildup. He better have something to really pay that off.
Tell you something. Here's how you do this. You don't throw a 95-mile-per-hour fastball at somebody. You don't sit up there and hit them with pitches. You don't do all of that. All you have to do as players to shame the Houston Astros, you don't shake their hands. You don't communicate with them. Hell, you can start every Major League Baseball game against the Houston Astros as a team, turning your back to that franchise.
Weak. So weak. Doesn't the person who doesn't shake hands always look worse than the person who...
Well, I don't know. Sometimes it's pretty awesome. Like, the time the Celtics refused to shake LeBron's hands after he beat them. I love that.
That was lame. That was petty.
Awesome. I loved it. I know. I'm a petty person. What can I say? It was great.
I think the person who chooses not to shake hands is always weak. It's way better if you don't forgive the person to give them the dead fish. Like, the limp handshake and, like, eh.
But don't you have to give them a strong handshake and like, crush their bones?
No. People that do that are lame.
Oh.
The bone crusher Smith is awful.
Oh.
Do you like to give people the crusher grip?
If it's someone that I didn't like, I would probably give a bone crusher grip, yes. Establish dominance.
That's going to do it for us. For Ashley and Lydia, who kept this thing on the track. For all of you that listened through today, he's Paul Gallant, and he definitely wouldn't advise going into the drug importation business when it comes to your future career.
He's Danny O'Neill, and he wants me to get away from my bed. My bed is sacred. It is warm and cozy. So long, farewell. You'll hear us tomorrow.
It was just so much fun.